I just found out that there was a thing called wrestling court today, so I'm not happy.
What is wrestling court?
Wrestling court is when as a professional wrestler, do something that's a perceived slight to someone. Like, let's just say, like, it's something like this. Let's just say
you eat chicken in the wrong spot and get it in somebody's bag.
What was that?
You eat chicken in the wrong spot and get crumbs in somebody's duffel bag.
That's one thing.
But, so it's like kangaroo court in like a baseball team.
Yes. Right. It's like, hey, you're a referee. This guy's a wrestler. You got an upgrade to first class, and you don't offer it to the veteran wrestler. Well, when we get to TV, you're going to have to do wrestler's court. Now, usually it's just like they do, like, as you mentioned, a kangaroo court sort of thing. And then you have to buy, like, whoever you offended, like a case of beer or something like that. But then, like, your people, like your Undertakers and your JBLs from time to time might take it a little bit too far.
Who invented it? Mustachio?
Possibly.
Todd's renditions of the wrestling events he's been forced to watch have been stellar.
Oh, I'm glad. Wait until this week's.
how much you loved Bobby the Brain's commentary?
It was fantastic. Hey, listen, I only praise what I like, and if I don't like something, I'm going to bury it. So, but I liked Bobby the Brain is my man. I always loved him back in the day.
Yeah, I was more of a Hart Foundation guy. So,
I don't know those guys too well. Are they famous? So
Jimmy the Hart and Bret Hart and the Anvil were. I was big fans.
Because I was talking with it online the other day. The WrestleMania 2 Battle Royal that had wrestlers versus football players. I had to go whip that one up on the network the other day just to, like, oh, let me see how that was, you know? And, like, the wrestlers that are in are, like, Bill Frelick, William the Refrigerator Perry, Ed Too Tall Jones, and the likes of those people, right?
No Brian Bosworth?
No Brian. This was 1986, so, like, Brian Bosworth wasn't, like, a big deal, you know? And they were in Chicago, so there was, like, two other, like, low-end Chicago Bears in there as well. Mm-hmm. And you could tell a lot of these guys were like, oh, you have to buy, like, wrestling gear? Because, like, one guy was very obviously wearing George the Animal Steel's tights. Very obviously, because, like, George had very distinct black tights with the red stripe on them, you know? And this guy was wearing the same tights. And somebody else had, like, another person's tights on. But then, like, the wrestling side of things was like Hillbilly Jim, Pedro Morales, the Hart Foundation, the Killer Bees, and stuff like that. And I'm like, ah, this is the wrestling I know and love.
Wrestler appeared on the Hulk Hogan cartoon, you know, it was classic.
Right. What was that?
Oh, sorry. I was saying, do you think a young Philip Brooks was in the audience watching that?
No, that was before. That was back when he wanted to be a mixed martial artist.
Oh, okay.
That's the revisionist history tells, that he always wanted to be a mixed martial artist, but it was just wrestling was the thing that was more popular by the time he was old enough to participate in any of those things.
I don't know. Might just be a gentle ribbing he's giving fans.
Mm-hmm. Right. But it was so, because the turnaround time on how long it would take to make the cartoon, and by the time the cartoon would come out, and the turnaround time sometimes in the world of professional wrestling, like by the time the Rock and Wrestling cartoon came out, Wendy Richter no longer in the promotion, Jimmy Snuka no longer in the promotion, Andre I think might have either just turned or was about to turn heel, so it was just like, nah, whatever, we'll just put these out. And I think Captain Lou might have been fired around that time as well.
That's when I watched. That's where I got all my wrestling knowledge from, was Rock and Roll Wrestling.
Yeah.
I remember seeing all those classic guys. Big John Studd, if you remember him.
He was from Butler, Battle Royal. Him and the Fridge had a big, like, to-do.
Right. So his brother-in-law worked with my dad. So I'm from a podunk town in the middle of nowhere, but this is back when the WWF would travel to podunk towns in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And so I don't know if it's because he was fairly local, but so we had, you know, Snuka was there, Steamboat was there, Big John Studd was there, Who else? I have an old promo, like an old sheet somewhere with the lineup on it.
Oh, man, it was love to see that.
And it was like just person after person, you know, who now is just so classic that I got to see when, boy, I don't know, when I was 10, 12 maybe.
See, but this was what town were you in at the time?
Katanning, PA.
I'd never even heard of that. So where would you go to the where would you see the shows?
So that show was actually we had I lived across the street from the local swimming pool.
Okay.
And ice rink. And they had the show in the ice rink.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to tell me they drained the pool.
That would have been awesome.
Put a ring in there and everybody gets to look down into the pool.
The pool, ice rink, and it also had a par 3 golf course was a privately owned family company. They had all kind of events in the ice rink during the summer. And, they had WWF there a couple times. And this is way back in, like, you know, WrestleMania, pre-WrestleMania 1 and then WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 2 days. Either one or two, there was some blackout happened in Pittsburgh. Like, something happened that you couldn't watch.
Oh, yes! That's a huge story, because that was before pay-per-view when they would do the closed circuit.
Right, so you had to go to somewhere.
And people rioted. It.
So they ended up broadcasting it on our local, like, I think it was NBC affiliate. For free, like, a couple of weeks later. The whole thing. So, like, everyone in Pittsburgh got to see, like, WrestleMania 2 just on broadcast TV.
That is awesome.
I think it was WrestleMania 2, I'm pretty sure. But, yeah, this was back in the day where you had to go like you were going to a live event and sit in front of TV screens and,
so,
you know, big projection screens.
Now, I found a card from Kittanning, PA at the Belmont Arena in 1984.
That's it!
Okay.
Boom!
Joe?
Yes.
As you go, for my sake,
yes.
I want to know alive or dead.
Okay. This is a pretty good run. You're all right on this one. You've got Jesse Ventura versus Ivan Putski.
Oh, the body versus Polish power.
Kamala versus Salvatore Bellomo.
Ugh. Stuff.
Private Terry Daniels versus Big John Studd. Big John Studd, sadly, no longer with us.
So all those guys are alive so far?
Everyone so far is alive. And then the main event was Tito Santana versus Don Morocco.
Wow.
All right, but it must have been another one that I saw Ricky Steamboat, but I just remember.
Now, see, there was another one that I found.
Was there also one? I'm trying to remember one. I think that Wendy Richter was at one.
Now, see, I'm trying to find the results from them. The only other one that I could find is a 1987 one that has, like, this is a terrible show. You know, it's like Terry Gibbs versus Omar Atlas, Jerry Allen versus Dante DiNucci. They split up, like, the tag matches. Where they did, like, the Fabulous Rougeaus against Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo, but in singles matches. And then Demolition versus Jimmy Jackson and Ray Miller.
Oh, my God. That was a sold-out show right there.
It claims here that it was a paid attendance of 500 at the Belmont Ice Arena.
Yeah, that was right across from my house.
They're hanging from the rafters.
So I was at those shows. So
we would get those shows here, like, you know, because in Scranton we had the Catholic Youth Center, and we would get like these C level type shows where we would get shows that were like the main event was like Nikolai Volkoff versus Corporal Kirshner. And I'll never forget there was one where it was advertised and delivered as a main event of Iron Mike Sharp versus Brickhouse Brown.
Oh,
hell of a main event.
And somehow I'm still a wrestling fan after seeing that at such a young, impressionable age.
I mean, it was Iron Mike Sharp. He did put someone into, like, a figure four leg lock or something, right?
No. Well, if you remember Iron Mike Sharp, he had that
he had a brace or something that had steel in it or something.
And he had a leather sleeve on his arm that he would, like, mock that he was adjusting to, like, adjust, as you say, a piece of metal in there.
Right.
But because this was at a Catholic youth center, you know, I had kids and everything, this is one of my most vivid memories as a child. So you would buy those containers of orange drink that were like in the little tiny, like, milk containers, but it was like orange drink, right?
Right.
So Iron Mike Sharp comes out. Like, anytime any of the heels come out, the fans are just pelting them with these orange drink containers, right? So Iron Mike Sharp.
That's all good Catholics do.
Right. Iron Mike Sharp, quick thinking, right? He grabs one and stuffs it in the back of his tights. And he uses it as, like, the foreign object in the match.
That is gold.
So then, like, the referee takes it from him. He antagonizes the fans. They throw more at him. He grabs another one. And he must have did this, like, three or four times. And as a kid, I was like 7 or 8 when I saw it. So I was super hot about it. But when I think back on it, I'm like, that was ingenious. I love stuff like that.
When I went to see stuff at the Catholic Youth Center,
right.
I've blocked it all out, Joe. I don't remember a match. The only thing I remember is my father, who's a saint of a man, Joe. You know that.
Right.
Taking me, and we were sitting on the, like, you know, in the bleachers, maybe. I don't remember how it was set up.
Right.
And we're sitting there, and we're there, and my father's like, let's sit here, we'll watch it. And there was a guy, like, just a rowdy guy in front of us, just going crazy. And he leans forward, and his shirt came up in the back, and tucked in the belt, no holster, was just a revolver.
Right.
And my father goes, you know what? I think I can find us some better seats. And that's the only thing that I remember from ever seeing a show at the youth center. That there was an armed thug in front of us.
The only two similar instances like that, one I was witness for, and the other one was in the papers at the time, where Paul Orndorff decked an old lady.
That was a shut old lady.
No. It was like one of those deals where, like, he's walking out, whatever, like he, you know, did something dastardly, and someone hit him from behind. So his immediate reaction was just to swing. Mm-hmm. And it was like an old woman that he, like, destroyed. So then there was another time where this was around the time that the Islanders, Haku and Tama, had stolen Matilda, the lovable mascot of the British Bulldogs.
British Bulldogs, yep. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have their match, they cheat to win, whatever. As they're leaving, so it had to be some drunken frat guy is, like, up on, like, he's on the rail, leaning over, finger in their face, yelling at them, whatever he's yelling at them, and they just grab him and pull him over the rail and beat the ever-loving shit out of him. And I was like, as a kid, I'm like, what do you do when you see that as, like, a 6 or 7 year old kid? Like, a fan just get pulled over the rail and beaten unmercifully by these two scary Tongan gentlemen.
Your 6 year old mind goes, work! It's a work!
Right. I saw him hand him a blade. That's why he's bleeding from the mouth.
That guy was probably on promo powder.
Oh, my. You know what? I'm sure he was.
You know, I think they should have worked that whole angle that they should have teamed up with Jake the Snake Roberts and said that they had fed Matilda to the snake and, like, had fed the snake like a groundhog or something. So it had, like, a huge bulge in it.
Well, Ray,
and then taken that out to the mat and been like, ate Matilda.
I don't know if you were watching at the time. Do you remember when Earthquake squashed Damien?
No.
So one of the ways that they would start a feud in the WWF around this time was a heel would have his match, and he was too busy either beating up the jobber guy or yelling at the fans, and he wouldn't be leaving the ringside area. But we're on a timetable. We've got to get to the next match. So then, like, a babyface would come out, and then the babyface and heel would meet in the aisleway, and now you've got an instant feud right there from that. Well, Earthquake does this to Jake. Jake, you know, takes a shot at Earthquake. They go into the ring. They're brawling. And before he does so, Jake took the bag with Damien and put it underneath the ring. So Earthquake ends up getting the upper hand on Jake. Earthquake goes out of the ring, gets the bag. Definitely the same bag that he threw under the ring. Not right. A separate bag that was under there already. And he puts it in the ring, and he does the Earthquake splash on the bag with Jake tied up in the ropes, helplessly, unable to do anything about it.
I swear to God, like, what, the PETA or something like that didn't come to the rescue?
No.
This would have been, you know, when people were people and, you know, PETA didn't exist.
Right, this is, like, 1990, when, like a year later when Jake turned heel and he was, like, having, like, cobras bite Randy Savage on the arm, and then the cobra won't let go, so Jake is just slapping the cobra viciously to get it to let go of Randy Savage's arm. There's no PETA involved there. It's wrestling. It's a lawless world where anything can happen until a fat guy in a suit comes out and tells you to stop.
That's right. Is that the Charlie Day approach to getting an angry snake off an arm, is make it more angry?
Yeah, just slap it.
Just keep slapping it around. It'll let go.
Let's put more cats in the wall.
Oh, my goodness. So, Ray, right, listen to me, Craig. As I usually do, this is all being recorded. This will probably end up being next week's After Dark, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
So... this is After Dark number 124. We're in the middle of things. We have Craig from Puzzle Warriors 3 with us. We've been talking classic wrestling here.
Thank God.
Right? And we usually record the After Dark before the actual show, so I figured we would be shooting the shit here for a while.
That just blows my whole, you know, perception of how this show goes. All those countless times I've heard you tell your son goodnight, I thought that was it later.
No, it's like about 9, it's about this time, you know? 9 o'clock, he's not up until like midnight. You're the one person that believed the show is streamed live through the website. I'm sorry to destroy the illusion.
Hey, I just want to say that I'm honored to be on the show with people who are the foremost authority on comic books, wrestling, Doctor Who, and of course... Cinnabon.
All right. See, this is part of the reason why we're going to have you on with After Dark. I don't remember how the Cinnabon thing started, but I don't get it.
So, Ian and I watch way too much Saturday Night Live.
Okay. Right?
This is a known. So, way back in the day, I believe, was it, I don't think it was Mike Myers. No. I'm trying to place the out. Anyway, SNL, as you would always do, skits that were premised to be cable access TV shows. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones they would do was Goth Talk. So one of the characters, like, so you get, you know, you have the teenagers and all the makeup and all the stuff. And this guy would come on, he's like, I'm Azrael Abyss. You know, and he would talk in the weird voice and they would talk. And at one point, Jim Brewer comes down the stairs and he's the older brother. And he's the jock, you know, because it's Jim Brewer, you know, high on whatever it is that Jim Brewer was taking that day. And he goes, shut up, Todd. You work at Cinnabon. Don't you gonna be late for your job? And it has just always stuck with me when I hear someone whose name is Todd. All I hear in my head is, no, my name is Azrael Abyss.
And see, when I put in SNL Goth Talk... and a space, it immediately pre-filled with Cinnabon.
Aha!
Oh, man. These are sketches from, like, 1999. Look at you guys remembering stuff.
Isn't it funny that that happens and I actually have a job at Cinnabon?
The day you talked about cleaning off your steps from the snowstorm, so you get the work to go to Cinnabon.
Hey, I'm a team player. I will... You can ask Joe. Give me a joke, and I'll beat it to death.
Oh, man, that had me rolling.
And whenever Cinnabon, like, whenever any of you take the picture of the Cinnabon and tag Todd in it, I love it.
Well, that was in California. We're at Universal Studios. And they have a Cinnabon in Universal right by the where you get on to the Walking Dead attraction.
Oh, there you go.
That was me. I got it placed right there for the comic book fans of the show.
Yeah, so we're walking to Walking Dead, and I'm like, oh, well, I got to take a picture with this. Oh, I have still never eaten a Cinnabon in my life.
I can make you some. It's an easy recipe, as I always say.
That's what I hear. It's cinnamon and uncooked dough, right?
Undercooked. Let's not get crazy. Undercooked.
I've really been reveling in you making Joe watch these old Doctor Who.
Oh, that was my whole plan the whole time, was that before Joe passes away, unless he takes his own life from this.
The year's not over yet.
I know. I was like, he's going to see every Doctor in his life, and he cannot go through the rest of his life with going, I've never seen this Doctor. That's going to happen.
All right, what are you going to do when you get to like Doctors 9 and on? Because most of their stories are stories.
He's probably going to get two 40-minute stories, and that'll work out perfectly. Okay. Even if they don't like go together, they're just going to be – he's going to get two 40-minute stories. Or some of them are two-parters, so you never know. He may get a two-parter.
I'm just excited for him to hit Tom Baker. This will be exciting stuff.
Oh, Tom Baker is the hardest one for me because I'm like – do I give him my favorite? Do I give him the wackiest because that's what he likes? I don't know.
Tom Baker's so the scarf guy, right?
Oh, yeah. Hush your mouth, Joe.
But I was saying to Todd at the shop the other day that outside of the movies, I have currently seen more single episodes of Doctor Who than every single TV iteration of Star Trek combined.
Oh, that hurts my soul.
I was just never a Star Trek guy. I don't know. Like, it wasn't...
Because there's thousands of episodes of Star Trek.
And there's thousands of episodes. There's, like, multiple different... Your Voyagers, your Deep Space Nines, your everything else like that.
I'll save you trouble. Don't ever watch Voyager. It's garbage.
Wasn't there the one called Enterprise that had Scott Bakula on it?
It did. Much better than Voyager. Outside of the fact it has the worst theme song of maybe any TV show ever.
What? Star Trek Enterprise has lyrics to their...
So bad.
That's like the original Star Trek had lyrics, so Gene Roddenberry could collect an extra check. Do you know that story?
No.
When the guy who did the Star Trek theme song back in the day, he's like, here you go. Here it is. And when Gene got it, Gene copyrighted it but added lyrics to it, so he gets 50% of the money when it's played.
That's awesome.
Even though they never used the lyrics, but because he put lyrics to it, so you could go look it up. You could go find it on like YouTube and stuff like that. And the guy was like livid about it, as I would be.
Have you ever heard the Have you ever heard it with the lyrics?
Yes, I have.
Well, Craig, have you?
I have not.
My goodness, not as a Star Trek fan, I know this. It like starts like, and again, this is After Dark, so it's the singing episode. Beyond the rim of the starlight, my love is wandering in starflight. And then it's like, you know, whatever. It's a bunch of other nonsense.
I'm sure I can't compare it to... the rendition of Bilbo Baggins by Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, from his like album when he was like, "I'm not Spock, I'm like a serious artist."
Yeah, but have you seen the video of that?
No, I have. I'm making a list of all these things that I have to watch.
Watch that on YouTube sometime. It's like a recording of an old TV show, and for whatever reason, there's all these like Playboy bunny girls, and I think there's they don't look like they're supposed to be hobbits or elves. They look like bunnies. And they keep, like, twitching their noses and stuff. But they're there, like, hanging all over him. Because this is, like, you know, Playboy Leonard Nimoy. You know, this is...
Right. Was it on an episode of, like, Playboy After Dark or something?
I don't know. It's in... But, like, most of it's... A lot of it's in black and white. And it's clearly two different reels spliced together. Because parts of it is in color. And a part of it gets cut to black and white. Because I don't think there is an actual... full copy of this thing in existence.
And that's the thing. I go to YouTube and I started typing in Leonard Nimoy and I got N-I and it filled in Nimoy Bilbo Baggins.
It is gold. I mean, it's one of the greatest things you'll ever see.
All right. So I got a lot of stuff to do tonight.
And there's a third Doctor version of him doing a spoken word lyrics to the Doctor Who theme song. That's another good one. You should look up, Joe. Fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I grew up watching, you know, Tom Baker on PBS. But, you know, nowadays, Dr. Tennant is my guy. I'm a Tennant fan.
You're a Tennant fan?
Yeah.
I am a total Peter Capaldi man of the new ones. I just love, like, angry. Listen.
Well, see, that's why I really enjoyed Eccleston. Because I enjoyed the way he portrayed the post-war doctor as... kind of angry, kind of bitter, but, you know, got his heart softened up by Rose.
The best way to describe the Ninth Doctor is he has survivor's guilt. That's the way I always look at him.
Yeah.
He has survivor's guilt from surviving the Time War. Wouldn't you agree, Joe?
Absolutely.
He will when he gets to that season.
Oh, he's going to love it. I can't wait till he gets to 6 and 7. That's where the show peaks. And Colin Baker, no relation to Tom Baker, and Sylvester McCoy. That's where it peaks.
I mean, just as saying that, I wouldn't say this out loud because, you know, this would be, you know, not allowed in this country. But saying that someone had, you know, bootleg copies of every, like, Doctor Who episode in existence, man, some of them are gold.
Oh, I wouldn't know anybody who has bootleg copies of Doctor Who episodes either. But you are right. They are all gold.
Every time I go back and watch the Aztecs, it makes me just makes me cry.
Now, see, I enjoyed the Aztecs.
Oh, I mean, that's a rough kind of go to get that story going.
Because
what? So... That's a great story. That's one of my favorite first Doctor stories. I call him like the Joker Aztec. He's like, he's just chewing scenery. He's like, well, we will get the Doctor. And it just, I don't know if you know this, occasionally there's a close-up on him while he's doing this.
But you have the Doctor's granddaughter who then just disappears later.
Oh, grandfather!
And then, you know, later in Doctor Who lore, eventually you end up with the Doctor's daughter, and then she just disappears somewhere. And then
she's actually the daughter of a doctor that marries another doctor in real life. That's fantastic. Right?
I did not. Does that the actress is married to another doctor?
She is the fifth doctor's daughter in real life, and she married David Tennant.
Okay, I didn't know she was married. I didn't know they were married.
Yes, that's so it's like this weird, I don't know, it's doctor-daughter marriage thing. I don't know, it's crazy.
It all sounds very incestuous.
Doctor-daughter would be okay as long as they never, never, never bring back Dr. Donna.
What? I love Donna as a
character. Worst story arc in the history of Doctor Who, featuring the worst companion in the history of Doctor Who. Donna Noble is a piece of garbage.
Craig, we're taking this to the street if I ever see you again. If I ever see you in the street, it's on. It's on. Donna Noble is one of the best companions of all time. And her tragic ending is, it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart
out of every scene and just give me more of her dad because he was a much more compelling character.
Her grandfather, actually, because it was supposed to be her father, but the actor got cancer and died. See, I know my stuff. Just Joe sitting back in agony is my favorite thing right now. Is my favorite thing. As this opened with shows from Kunkeltown, Pennsylvania in 1987 or whatever, and I'm sitting here just like, oh, look at my phone. Like, look at my phone. And we're discussing Donna Noble, and he's just like, oh, what's going on here?
We could talk about football fake. We could talk about that if you'd like.
Hey, whoa now.
How the NFL's a work, and it's all predetermined.
Hey, being from Western Pennsylvania, those are fighting words.
Nah.
I was just going to say.
Nothing besmirches the beloved Steelers.
Well, I'll say this. I'll say this about the Steelers. Lately, they've been giving the Raiders a run for their money and how many criminals they could have on their team. But other than that,
you first got to at least pronounce it right. Steelers. That's people who steal things.
Oh,
they are the Stillers.
The Stillers.
If you are from the Berg, it is pronounced Stillers.
I drive through the Berg on my way out to Ohio, and that's about as close as I'm going to get.
It's the Pittsburgh Stillers.
And if you're a Raiders fan, it's pronounced frauds.
Man, Immaculate Conception will never be forgotten.
I think you mean the Immaculate
Reception. Well, that won't be forgotten either.
Because I don't think the Immaculate Conception is going to be forgotten anytime soon, Craig.
You knew what I meant.
No, I knew what you meant. As a Raiders fan, that never happened. But yes, I know what you said and meant.
Strangely, I also grew up as a Raiders fan as my second favorite team. Very strange.
All right, Craig. It's on. I swear to God.
I love big play football with, you know, you had the snake, you know, you had, oh, it's good stuff.
First of all, there's no such thing as a second team. That's like, oh, I have a second wife. It's all good. And to be a Steelers fan and then go, my second team is the Raiders? That's ridiculous.
But what about if you live in Utah, can you have multiple football teams that you like since you're allowed to have multiple wives there by your analogy?
Yes, that's the only place. But you're not allowed to drink at games.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's no booze. It's a dry county over there.
Oh, my. You're a big Donna Noble fan, huh?
I am. I will defend Donna Noble to the end.
Man.
She was different. We went from the companion that loved the doctor and the doctor loved her back but wouldn't admit it. Then we went to the girl who loved the doctor but the doctor was still thinking about the companion and didn't even know she existed. And then we got the companion who was just the smart aleck friend, and I loved it. And the whole thing where in the one episode with Agatha Christie where they're doing charades and she comes up with Harvey Wallbanger is one of the greatest scenes in the history of Doctor Who.
I don't know. I'm a Rose person, and if they could spin off a whole show that's just River Song, I would watch every episode of that.
That would be good.
Because boy, do I love me some River Song.
I like River Song.
You've got to get him some River Song episode. I mean,
I'm thinking we'll see.
Is there any episodes with the guy who plays Merlin on them? Because what's his name on the Doctor Who?
Oh, he's a Captain Jack.
Right. Oh, the face of Bo.
Yes.
Captain Jack, again, a show that really should come back because Torchwood was also a very good show.
Oh, the Children of Earth is one of the greatest, some of the best sci-fi I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, ignore Miracle Day because that was just kind of so-so.
Oh my God! I just say watch two episodes of Miracle Day and never, like watch the Captain Jack with Fabrizio episode. I don't even know what his name is. I'm using Fabrizio from Titanic, but that episode and the end with it's Bill Pullman just yelling to the little girl that he killed years before, get ready to start running in hell because I'm coming for you. And I'm like,
what do you mean? If you're looking for sci-fi featuring an immortal bisexual, man, Torchwood is the show for you.
And trisexual. He'll try anything once.
That's true. But, oh, I love Captain Jack.
He gives Captain Kirk a run for his money in that area.
Well, I think, he's got better odds because he discriminates.
Well, I don't think Kirk discriminates, but it was the 60s. They can only show him with the women. There was a lot of stuff happening off camera.
That's right. And he had better hair.
Not lifelike looking hair like some people.
Oh, I love our in jokes.
Right. That's an off air one. Oh boy.
Yes.
Whew. All right. So that's a spirited After Dark, I'd say.
It is.
We should talk about some comic books.
Well, we're okay. Thanks everyone for listening to episode 124 of After Dark. For Todd and our special guest Craig from Puzzle Warriors 3, we will catch you here next week.
I didn't even sing, kids.
That was part of the. I sang. I sang the lyrics to Star Trek.
We talked about making this the all musical Flash episode because, boy, that was couldn't get over quick enough for me.
Oh, it was perfectly fine filler entertainment.
Ooh. You know what I need on my DC TV? Less Supergirl. That's what I need.
She's all right, but the fact that I don't watch that, like, it's confusing to me. And we can't get into, well, we can, because in the order in which these things will come out, we'll have already talked about this past week's Legends of Tomorrow. Even though I haven't recorded
this week yet.
In our time vortex of things, but
wibbly wobbly.
Tomorrow, we'll have already done a poll on the Twitter of who had the worst wig on the episode of Legend of Tomorrow. Was it Felicity Smoak or was it Sergeant Steele or whatever his name is? Haywood. Who had the worst wig?
As soon as... Oh. As soon as I saw that, as soon as the episode started, I'm like, I have to tweet.
But there's still nothing that surpasses that George Lucas episode.
Oh my! Like, that was the worst makeup job
I think I've ever seen.
Oh, like that, like, the wig and fake beard that guy playing George Lucas was like shameful. It was like real. Student play production level bad.
Yeah, like, that was all real. High school, I'd be like, okay.
That was all real. That was his real wig and hair.
I question whether or not the Brigadier in those episodes of Doctor Who that I watched, in the episode that comes out tomorrow, I question if the Brigadier had a fake mustache on.
I'm just hoping their current time travel thing with Captain Cold we can still make permanent so I can get Captain Cold every episode.
That's what I said.
But I love him. He's the best.
Oh.
That's right. He's the current third best Flash villain on TV.
Stop it.
Maybe after this week's episode, the fourth. Who knows? We'll have to discuss.
You know what's most awesome about him? He's one of the four characters on the show that doesn't have super speed. Because everybody else on The Flash is a speedster.
No, there's only like three people like on the good guy's side with super
speed. But then all the villains have super speed.
No, just two.
No, more than that.
What other...
Reverse Flash.
Reverse Zool, Flash is dead.
Savitar. Rival.
Yep.
Rival's dead.
Yeah, but that's
what
like...
I'm just saying, The Flash has all these villains. All these villains. Stop picking the speedsters.
Okay, give me something. I'm going to say something before this gets out of hand. But that was the problem with The Flash in the 90s when it was written by like Mike Barron and Menzner Lobes, and as it went on, nobody knew how to write anybody could fight them unless they had super speed. So it was all this like super speed characters, Velocity 9 junkies. I'm hoping they bring Velocity 9 junkies into the show. They really need to get away from speedsters for a season. Oh, and speed rates. They have those too. Now they have the Black Flash that's trying to kill people. There's too many villains.
Just give me more Gorilla Grodd episodes.
There you go.
Again, I say just bring Captain Cold back and have him be in every one of those shows. You want me to watch an Arrow again? I'll put Captain Cold in there.
Gotcha.
Yeah, see, I'm still in the minority that I enjoy Arrow the most of the shows.
I fell behind. I never finished season one. I heard season two was the best. And then the other seasons I've been told have just been okay.
Kinda. You're right there. Season one, then season two is the best, then season three is all right. Then season four just goes completely off the rails. And if it wasn't for Anatoly this season, the Russian guy, I'd be checking out myself.
Wow. I don't know. I enjoy it.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to After Dark. We'll catch you all here next week.